Let's change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello again. This is Mickey Desai, your host for this week's episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast. I am still on the line with Jared Sheehan, who's the CEO of Powered By. Jared, how are you?
Wonderful. How are you doing, Mickey?
I'm doing great. The last episode, you said that Powered By was spelt without vowels. I was wondering what you had against vowels.
You know what? I just think they're so overrated. I feel like E.E. Cummings of the startup world. No, honestly, it was a cheaper URL than trying to pay for the whole Powered By.
That's original. Brilliant. Yeah. That is fantastic. So this week, I wanted to talk to a subject that's sort of near and dear to my heart, and that's mobile app development for nonprofits. I think that there are a lot of nonprofits out there who think that their mission activities can be facilitated by or solved by the presence of a mobile app. And sometimes that's true and sometimes that isn't. And I wanted to get your two cents on the whole matter.
Absolutely. And I have strong opinions about it.
Mm-hmm. Where do we start with that conversation? I mean, I guess there's the overall question is, do all nonprofits need an app? And then there's the deeper question is, well, okay, what are they going to do with it and how? And then after that, who gets to make it and for how much and so on and so forth?
Absolutely. Yeah, those are great questions. So to your first question, does every nonprofit need a mobile app? I think the answer absolutely is no. Mm-hmm. I think every nonprofit needs a mobile experience for their donors, but that does not mean they need a mobile app. And the differentiation there is mobile experience can be a website that they can go online on your phone via a Google or Safari, and be able to make a donation, right? And mm-hmm. and everyone needs to make sure that they're thinking about mobile optimization and mobile engagement in that sense. What I would say about mobile apps have a really interesting barrier to entry that's very different than a website. A website, you have a URL, you type it in, you Google it, whatever, you come to it, you click into it, you get there. Very simple experience. The only thing you have to worry about is either the search engine optimization component, aka trying to figure out where it is, and then once you're on the website, it's loading time. With mobile apps, you have this additional issue, which is going into the app store, whether it's the Play Store or the iTunes store, and then having to download an app. And then once you download that app, typically you have to do things to get into the app, whether that's hook up your Gmail or add in a password or register, whatever it is. So that's two additional steps that make it so users really have to want to get on your experience related to mobile. So that means that mobile apps really only have a few specific use cases that make them really, really exciting. One of those great use cases is discovery. So you'll see apps like Instagram or Who's or any stock market app. If you're sitting there on a train or about to take off on an airplane and you have an extra 10, 15, 20 minutes, what do? You pull out your phone, you read NPR, you look at the stocks of the day, you read an article, whatever it is, right? You're mm-hmm. you're discovering. You're looking at content. You're digesting information on a small format. The other side of that is mobile apps are really, really great if you have a very captive audience. What I mean by that is if your job is on the road all the time and you're not in front of your computer that much and you have a very specific activity that is needed to be done, then a mobile app is great for that. An example of that is if you are a corporate cause marketing fundraiser. Having a mobile app when you're out visiting corporate stores, these are brick and mortar stores, right? Walmart's, Costco's, those sort of things. When you're out visiting those people, typically you're not wanting to pull out a computer or a notepad. You want to be able to take a few quick notes, be able to voice to text some notes in there, maybe take a photo or two, take a photo of a check potentially, and accumulate all that for you so you're not forgetting it as you're out on the road. Blast that back to Mothership and put it in your CRM and be able to do that use case. So those are two examples of when a mobile app is most important. And what I would say to your second question or your second through kind of third question, when I think about whether or not you should build a mobile app, I have five key questions to always ask. First one is, do you have a great use case? And I just kind of gave you two great use cases. Mm-hmm. The second one is, do you have the right audience? Is this a captive audience? Is this a discovery audience? Are you able to capture this audience? Do you already have them there? Because the audience is really, really important for mobile, because if you don't get the audience, it will die on the vine. Again, unlike a website where you can just slap it up there and leave it out there for a while, mobile apps take a lot of care and nurturing and a lot of testing primarily to make sure that they work. And so the audience is key. third comment I would make on that is, has someone already built your idea, right? Is a great example of that is when we were very, very nascent before we had figured our stuff out, we built this really cool app that was a competitor to Instagram for nonprofits. Well, the issue is Instagram already existed and Instagram is great for nonprofits. So we weren't really solving a use case when we first built that app because it was the same thing as Instagram. It's just not as big of a base and therefore not as valuable as a concept. The fourth question is, do you have the right team to build it? Which is getting to your question, Mickey, which is, do you internally have that? Do you need to find someone to do that? How do you think about that piece of it? And then the fifth question is mobile a core competency of your team? Do you really want to be mobile experts? If so, why and in what situations? So those are my big five questions for you.
I mean, there's a lot there, I think, for individual nonprofits to try to suss through and clarify for themselves. It's not as easily as simply, deciding you need to. It's not as easy as just putting up a website and expecting something to happen.
Correct. Yeah, and that's really the big thing that makes mobile apps, because mobile apps on the surface seem very simple, right? You click into them, they only have a limited number of buttons, the screen size is pretty small. The deeper you get into them, the more that you build them, the more you realize how difficult they are. And which is why a lot of organizations, even technology organizations, oftentimes prefer to stay on websites and not move over to the mobile side of things because it's a bit scarier.
Mm-hmm. You know, in the world of nonprofits, I imagine there's also a lot of overlap in the kind of functionality that people want within their apps. And to that end, what happens when a nonprofit duplicates another nonprofit's app idea? Is that a good idea? Or do you find the nonprofits are willing to share what they've done with other nonprofits? What's your experience on these things?
Like anything, I think the answer is it depends. Mm-hmm. If it is a core differentiator for that organization, there's a good likelihood that they may not want to share it. Having said that, I think compared to the business world, the nonprofit world is much more apt to share things and be open to be able to collaborate on different ideas. One thing that we've kicked around with a few different organizations, and they never quite happen, but talking about rather than having one organization pay the full amount of development of an application, have two or three or four or five partner together, each get a discounted component of it so that they are able to get all of their use cases in place while doing it on a budget, which I think is a really fascinating way to think through some of those sort of things. So I think collaboration better in general is better in the nonprofit world. But again, if you you have a specific gala or walk or run that is very targeted to what you're doing and you have an app you spend a ton of money on related to that, you may not want to share it in those sort of situations. We have a few different examples that I won't get into the examples, but there are definitely some people that we know and have worked with that are less apt to be able to share technology that way.
So let's imagine then for a minute that we have a nonprofit that's gone through the motions. They have good use cases. They've got the initial funding down. They've determined that they're going to go ahead and do the app, that they have the audience for it. How do they pick the right team to build it?
Yeah, it's a great question. The first thing that they need to think through is what are their core competencies? What do they have in terms of their technical abilities, their product abilities, their design abilities? Where do they have gaps? And that doesn't need to be a really lengthy process. It's really just a matter of, do you have people who've ever built a mobile app before? If so, what part of that mobile app have they done? Mm-hmm. And how comfortable do they feel doing that, right? A few simple questions. And then from there, I'm always a big fan of going and chatting with a few different folks. I'll tell you that, there are a trillion and one developers out there that will tell you, oh yeah, we can build you this mobile app for some abysmally small amount of money. And they can. They can absolutely put something out there in the world that is for a very small amount of money. The issue is with mobile apps is the first version of the mobile app is the worst version of the mobile app, and it keeps evolving and growing.
Right.
And if you start out with something that's really poorly built or cheaply made or whatever that may be, and then try to expand and build upon it, it really turns into this massive mess that you're going to end up cleaning up down the road.
Right.
What I always recommend is if an organization is thinking about doing some version of this, whether they do this by themselves or whether they co-create with a partner, spend a bunch of time ideating, strategizing, designing, building mock-ups on something like an Envision or a sketch or something like that, and then actually taking that app and sharing it out with potential users of the app before you've written a single line of code. Take that prototype out, give it to the users, let them play around with it, get their feedback and thoughts. Would they use it? Would they not use it? When would they use it? Those sort of things. And so that by the time you're actually getting to the development phase, you have a pretty good idea of A, what does your MVP look like, minimum viable product?
Yep.
B, what's the time frame to get it done? C, what do we really need to do this? And then you can get to the D, what is the budget and what does it look like? And at the end of the day, your success rate is going to go up, your costs will go down, and whether or not you want to do that app because you spend a lot more time up front is going to be very clear by that point. You're going to have a really great business case, essentially.
Right. And I think another piece of the equation would be also is that you don't want to turn out something as a first run product that's going to alienate your audience or leave them disinterested.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, what do nonprofits have if not trust?
Exactly. So there's a lot to think about. It's not very simple. And as you've said before, it's once you have the app, it does require a lot of ongoing maintenance. You can't just deploy it and expect it to do its thing.
The only comment I have on that is the thing that people never think about with mobile apps, because it's different on websites than mobile apps. Websites, you build a website and you have to kind of manage it for, you know, Google Chrome, Safari, and Firefox, and they're all pretty similar with little tweaks. When you build a mobile app, you have to build it for, you know, 7 generations of iPhone and like 200 iterations of Android devices, or you have to pick and choose which ones you want to go. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have a never-ending testing issue that could pop up, which is why mobile apps become really, really difficult, because as soon as you have one person who's like, oh, I still use a BlackBerry phone, you're like, really? I didn't know anyone ever used that.
Right.
And that happens. Like, you know, we'll have users that will say, oh yeah, I'm still on an iPhone 4. And you're like, oh, well, we don't support that. Like, there's, you know, I don't know who does actually, you know what I mean? So that's where you really get into some trouble with mobile apps and when it really starts ballooning and becoming difficult is all the testing component of it.
So Powered By doesn't actually, do you do app development for other companies, or do you just stick to Neon Moves, Amelia and AI for nonprofits kind of thing?
Yes, we do both. We have, you know, we have a product arm as well as a consulting arm. We started on the consulting side of things and a lot of the work that we did was essentially going from idea all the way through, you know, idea, ideation, strategy, design, execution, management, analytics for larger organizations, typically large social enterprises, mm-hmm. A lot of nonprofits. So like I mentioned, Children's Miracle Network was one of our first clients. And then, you know, from there, we build out a few of these products that we are supporting and actively growing, but we have a team doing each of those things. So we do both.
I see. Very cool. If a nonprofit wanted to get in touch with you and talk about any of these things, how would they do that?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter. It's Powered By Jared. Also no vowels in the Powered By part. So PWRDBY, Jared, JARD. And then I'm on Facebook, LinkedIn, as well as if you wanted to shoot me an email, my email is jared@poweredby.com. And I'm always happy to chat. And, you know, most of the time I'll tell you that maybe that's better to be a mobile responsive website. But
right.
You know, every so often we find a really great use case and there's a great opportunity to co-create in those situations.
Yep, absolutely. Jared, I can't thank you enough. Is there anything else we should be sure to talk about before we conclude this episode?
No, I think you hit on all the good points. I really appreciate the time, Mickey. This has been wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us. And to our listener, thank you for joining us as well. Please do take the time to talk to your friends and colleagues about us. And if you don't mind, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you consume this podcast. Your reviews actually make us more searchable and we can reach more people and have more fun with them this way. Hope you're all having a great day. Stay safe. Thank you.
This has been the Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.